What does it take for you to become a key person of influence? The type of person that attracts more business than they can handle. A person who is one of the most highly valued and highly paid people in whatever industry you happen to be in. That's what my guest is here to talk about today. His name is Daniel Priestley. He is the author of three best-selling books, including Key Person of Influence and Oversubscribed. He started out as an entrepreneur in his early 20s and had built a multi-million dollar event marketing and management business. By the time he was age 25, he's a very successful entrepreneur, international speaker, and as I already mentioned, author. And the reason that I have Daniel on the show today is because I've read his Key Person of Influence book, and I was so impressed with the powerful yet simple concepts inside that I've not only used it in my own business to grow this podcast and legendary life, but I've also given this book to several of my close friends who are looking to expand their reach and impact more lives and make more money. And that's what you're going to learn today. You're going to hear about Daniel's five-step method to becoming the most highly valued and highly paid person in whatever industry you're in. So let's get to the interview with Daniel Priestley. Welcome back to another episode of the Legendary Life Podcast. Today, I have Daniel Priestley with us. Daniel is a serial entrepreneur and the author of three best-selling books, including Key Person of Influence, which I've read recently, and Oversubscribed, which I'm reading right now. And I am loving Daniel's ideas. I find them so clear and straightforward. They're just some of the best books I've ever read in this complicated world. We're overindulged in too much information about how to create a business out of, say, something that I'm doing. So anyway, Daniel, I am really happy to have you on the show today. Thank you for being with us.
I'm thrilled to be on the show. Thank you.
Yeah. And the way I want to get started is you have a part in your book in Key Person of Influence. You have a five-step method. And the first step is to perfect your pitch. So I'd love to hear your answer to the question, when someone asks you what you do, how do you answer that?
Well, my background is as an entrepreneur. In my 20s, I built companies in Australia and built national business into the tens of millions in sales. I then later started an entrepreneur growth accelerator, which is a combination of leadership training and development, access to resources and mentoring. And we now work with 1,500 entrepreneurs globally to help them to develop their business and help them to develop a brand as a key person of influence in their industry. So we're an award-winning organization. We also do fundraising, and we've raised over £350,000 in the last few years for various charities. And we're fortunate enough to work with some of the world's most famous and celebrated entrepreneurs and leaders to develop our clients. That's what I do. That's my whole background, has been in the entrepreneurial space. And as you said, I've also written the three books.
Yeah, very modest, Daniel, but I love it. It's a very clear pitch and just a great, great story. But let's dive back a little bit into the past. And I know you're an Australian, but now you live in London and you have this great business that's helping thousands of entrepreneurs everywhere with what you do with the key person of influence. How did you get started in this space? How did you become an entrepreneur? What led you to become the person you are today and what you're up to in the world?
So I was really fortunate to have great guidance and great mentors as a teenager. My dad put me onto some really cool books, things like Tony Robbins, Think and Grow Rich, Robert Kiyosaki. So I grew up in my teenage years reading great books. My parents also encouraged me to do strange things like run garage sales for money and to run dance parties for the local teenagers. So all through my teenage years, I always had some sort of an entrepreneurial venture going on at any given time. I had the opportunity to work at McDonald's, where I got to know the franchisee who owned six McDonald's restaurants. And he took me under his wing and shared with me the importance of systems and the importance of brand. I mean, we had lots of great conversations about one day that I would buy a McDonald's store. That was what was going on in my teenage years. I then went and did a business degree in Australia, but dropped out in the first year because I was really frustrated that I wasn't getting real life hands-on business advice. The people who were leading the course were very much academics, but that's not a problem. But what I wanted was hands-on practical advice. And I sought out a mentor who was a multi-millionaire who had a marketing agency, a marketing business. And from 19 to 21, I worked literally in his shadow. So I followed him wherever he went, if it meant getting up early and taking him to the airport, or if it meant calling through hundreds of people, doing sales appointments, proofreading documents, or licking stamps to put on envelopes. Whatever he needed me to do, I was in his shadow doing that for 2 years. And we ran hundreds of campaigns together. I eventually, you know, in the second year, ran a division of his business where he gave me a budget to launch a division of his business, and I was able to return him, you know, a great return on investment. And then at about 21, I decided that I wanted to go out and start my own business. I launched a company pretty much doing what I'd been trained to do at 21. I went from zero to $1 million in revenue in the first 12 months with about a $300,000-$400,000 profit.
Nice.
And then, yeah, it was phenomenal. We had a great team from day one. I'm a big fan that you should start a business with a team. And we had a team, we grew the business, and then in year three, we had grown to the point where we were doing, combined with a partner, we were doing $10.7 million worth of sales. And, you know, we were, you know, sort of pretty reasonably profitable. And then I organized a management buyout arrangement, moved to the UK to start a new business over here, and grew that from zero to £4 million with the original team here in London before the global financial crisis, where that business was pretty heavily affected. And it kind of made me think about what sort of pivot I wanted to do. You know, I was really thinking about, what do I really want to be doing? I felt like I'd been kind of pulled off in a bit of a direction that was opportunistic and not really the best expression of what I wanted to be doing. And I thought this was a great time to pivot. And at the time, I was really fascinated by Silicon Valley growth accelerators. So in Silicon Valley, they take 22-year-old kids who can code, and they try and encourage them to come up with some sort of idea that would be valuable to society. And then because they've got the coding skills, they can, you know, engineer a software solution and develop a product and try and scale that product. And some of the most successful companies in the world have come out of Silicon Valley growth accelerators. So companies like Evernote, Uber, are multi-billion dollar examples of Silicon Valley growth accelerator companies. And there's countless companies that have been grown to 20 million and 10 million and 100 million and all of those as well. So I was very fascinated by the model, but what really fascinated me was, what if you didn't start with 22-year-old kids who could code? What if you started with 37-year-olds who had been in a service industry for 17 years, had really deep insights into their industry, into their customers' mindset, into the shortcomings of their industry, but they didn't have the coding skills, they didn't have the product knowledge, the product creation knowledge, but they really had deep insights. And what if we approached the problem a different way? So we set up a growth accelerator designed for service-based businesses, really focused on people who had every right to be a key person of influence in their industry. They had the experience, they had the connections and the networks, they had, you know, the results and the accolades. But what if we could then impact the way they took their insights to market and build a growth accelerator around it? So we did that, and we've had some phenomenal success stories. We've had businesses that have gone on to become worth tens of billions of dollars. We've had businesses that have raised millions. And, you know, more importantly, we've actually had countless lifestyle businesses emerge where our clients have said, hey, I don't want to have tens of millions. I want to have a team of eight people doing really healthy revenues and have a lifestyle business and have a lot of fun. And we've been able to produce countless examples of those. On the program, our clients have produced close to 500 books. So there are now 500 books in the world that didn't exist prior to the program or wouldn't have existed outside of the program. We've produced hundreds of products, you know, won hundreds of awards with our clients, all of that sort of stuff. So, you know, so my world is, I'm up to my elbows in entrepreneurs and leaders. We are in Australia, Singapore, UK and USA. We have a global team internally of 40 full-time people on 7 time zones. We have a mentoring team of about 40 full-time men, or not full-time, 40 mentors who head up our mentoring program globally. And believe it or not, at the moment, we're actually now working with some of the biggest brands on the planet, multi-billion dollar businesses.
Like, for instance?
Like, for instance, without dropping the name, but like, for instance, one of the largest consulting firms in the world, one of the largest accounting firms in the world, one of the largest fitness businesses in the world. And we work with their top-ranking people to help cultivate them as key people of influence.
Yeah. Wow. That's such an awesome story. And I love how clear you are on it. And when you said with the growth accelerator out of Silicon Valley, then you switched over, you're like, well, what if we didn't use 22-year-olds? What if we use 37-year-olds and people who are technically proficient, had the results, were good at what they do, but they didn't understand how to transition out of that technical space, out of being that service provider into something bigger. And man, I'll tell you, Daniel, I mean, we've never spoken before this except for a few Facebook messages and emails, but that was me for years in the fitness business. I'm a personal trainer for 17 years now, and I just hit that ceiling and I didn't understand what I needed to do to get beyond it. And that's why I love your book so much. And besides my story, I've talked to many of the people who've listened to this show, and although this isn't a show necessarily about entrepreneurs, it's more of a health, fitness, success psychology. And that's where this fits in. So if you're listening to this right now, and because I've talked to you guys, I've talked to several of you, and you've told me you've got the skills, you've got the knowledge, you've got the results, but you want to do something on your own and you don't know how to do it. And you know who I'm talking about, because I'm sure you remember those conversations. And Daniel, that's what I want to get into today, because there are so many people who are like how I was and how I still am, but at least I know the path I'm on now. But there are a lot of people still stuck. Can you talk about that person who's proficient, gets results, good at what they do, but they feel like something's wrong with them. Maybe they don't get business. Can you talk to them about what they're running into, what they need to get past that?
Well, here's the number one thing, the absolute number one thing. Because we live in our own life 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we lose perspective on our own value. So there's an analogy that I give, and it is the analogy of climbing a mountain. And when you go and you stand at a distance from a mountain, it looks so massive and it's so majestic and so imposing. But then when you climb, you get so close to it that you struggle along one foot after the next. And finally, you get up to the top of the mountain and you can see everything. You can see the beach, you can see the lakes, you can see the horizon. And suddenly you start seeing lots of beautiful places you'd love to go visit. You go, wouldn't it be great to go to the beach? Wouldn't it be great to go to the lake? Wouldn't it be great to sail on that horizon? And the one thing that you've completely lost perspective of is the fact that you're standing on that majestic, massive mountain because you're too close to it. Yeah. So the story for every entrepreneur and every leader and every individual that I've come across is that when I start unpicking their story and their experience, I find absolute gems. I find a mountain of value. And we call this, in modern terms or in business terms, we call this intellectual property. And intellectual property is a very simple question, which is, what do you know about that other people don't know about but would probably solve problems for them? So, you know, when I start unpicking what some people know about, it can be little things. It can be how to win an award within your industry. And you can actually, you know, I once came across a guy who was an absolute master at how to use credit cards to clock up a lot of points to fly business class for free. And he knew strategies and techniques that maximized the points system on air miles. And he built an entire very successful business advising privately owned companies how to use their points systems more effectively so their executives could fly business class for free. Now, that's something that he, for many years, had just taken an interest in. He was a bit of a pedantic when it came to maximizing his points, and he had created some spreadsheets and some guidelines, and he thought that was, you know, just a quirk that he had, but he built a really successful business around that. I've worked with fitness trainers and fitness professionals. A great example is I worked with a fitness trainer whose top client was a guy who was on 400,000 pounds a year, working insane hours, working international, you know, Hong Kong, London, Singapore, New York. And what he did is he devised a strategy for how this guy could keep fit, even with the crazy schedule, even with the lunchtime meetings, even with the travel, all of that sort of stuff. And he then decided to build his whole business around that type of client and run a fitness concierge service as opposed to a personal fitness training business. Now, his business went from about £70,000 a year as a personal trainer to over £200,000 a year as a fitness concierge. And it was based upon some deep insights that he had into one type of client. There's a lot of examples, and people need perspective. No matter who you are or how good you are, you can't get perspective on your own life. You need sounding boards. You need reflection. You need trusted individuals who can help you to unpick your value, who can actually go, hey, stop right there. What you've got is of value. What you know is interesting. That story, that frustration, that example is something of high value. Don't overlook that. And it's very difficult to do this on your own by yourself. You have to kind of have someone who doesn't know you and doesn't know your story and doesn't know all the stuff that you're aware of outside of your industry who can kind of slow you down on this.
Yeah, let me interject there because there's three powerful points. The one that you just said is that most people just don't have the skills or the emotional distance to figure out where their gold is and what they could do as a business in something that could be very lucrative, potentially very lucrative, and also very rewarding as well. And man, I find that so much to be true. And when people struggle, even when fitness, because like I mentioned, I'm a fitness professional, it's like, well, you don't have the right coaching. And I'm not doing this to sell you, Daniel, but I really believe in this idea and also in what you do. And the second thing that I thought you said was really important was, you don't necessarily have to take what you're great at now or what you're doing professionally. You can have a hobby or something that's been a hobby of yours that you figured out to a high level and you're able to get great results with it. And what that immediately reminded me of is a conversation with a Harvard-trained attorney who listens to this show. And he was talking to me about how he makes a great income, but it just isn't doing it for him. He would like to get out there and inspire people and to do something that is more meaningful to him. And so if you're in that position and you're listening, Daniel is the guy to do this. Make sure you check out Key Person of Influence. I would read that one before Oversubscribed. I think Oversubscribed is a little bit more complex. Definitely dive into Key Person of Influence. And the third thing, Daniel, and this is an epiphany that happened to me while reading your book, is I'm a fitness professional and I read that example that you just mentioned. And I work with all these CEOs of multi-million dollar companies that are in that situation. I'm like, duh, you know, like there is a way to take something that you're already doing and get into more of a micro niche, which I'm sure we'll get into when we talk about your book, and streamline it to make it solve a particular problem for a particular person, and you can charge a lot more money for that instead of just being a personal trainer. There's just so much opportunity out there. It really has to do with how you look at things. So let's dive into your book, Key Person of Influence. There's the 5-step method to become one of the most highly valued and highly paid people in your industry. Can you talk a little bit about why you wrote it and then and what a key person of influence is, and we'll jump into the steps?
Sure. So in every industry, there are key people of influence and their names come up in conversation. They attract opportunities for that reason, and therefore they make more money and have more fun. What I was fascinated about is that in any industry that I was going into, there were people who were making fabulous amounts of money and there were hundreds of people who weren't. So I would see property developer driving around in a Ferrari, making literally millions per year. But then I would meet literally hundreds of property developer wannabes or workers who were in the industry but were struggling. And people thought everyone in property must be making money. And I knew for a fact hundreds of people weren't. And it was always the key person of influence who was making a fortune, because the person who had a property deal that was a really great deal would call that key person of influence first. I was traveling around the world with some of the world's top entrepreneurs in my previous business, and authors and experts and speakers and CEOs. And one of the things that just shocked me is the constant stream of opportunities coming at them. So they weren't making outbound phone calls for opportunities. People were emailing them, ringing them, trying to get in touch with them, you know, bashing the door down, tweeting them, all of that sort of stuff to try and send them what other people had discerned as really great opportunities. And what they would do is they would spend some of their time every day just filtering through, saying no to stuff and saying yes to maybe, you know, 1 in 100 great opportunities. And what I noticed is that all the best opportunities end up on the lap of a key person of influence. So I started thinking, how is it that these people have become key people of influence? Because knowing them behind the scenes, they're just regular people. They're not 100 times smarter. They're not 100 times more energetic. They're not 100 times more charismatic. They're just normal people who seem to be well known. And I realized that a few things. Number one, traveling around with a particular CEO, I realized that every time he was on radio, every time he was interviewed, every time he gave a talk, every time he would inspire his team, he would say the same sorts of things over and over and over again. And he would pitch and pitch and pitch and pitch his key ideas over and over and over again, hundreds and hundreds of times. And I realized that this was a common trait. When I was looking at all sorts of people who were in that position, they were all very good at pitching. And I was a huge fan of Steve Jobs. He was amazing at pitching. And when I look at Elon Musk today and all the different videos across YouTube, he says the same things over and over again. He's great at pitching. I noticed a common element was publishing, that essentially these people had published blogs, articles, reports, and most of them had a book. And I realized that published content gets found by people all over the world and helps opportunities to flow. You found me through my book, for example.
Sure.
And the third one is how they make their money. They're well connected to the right products. So every key person of influence, including people like Roger Federer, for example, who's a tennis player, he makes a lot of his money by being well connected to Moet and Chandon, to Rolex, to Credit Suisse. You know, he's making money by having a product ecosystem that fits with his brand. And then if you drill into other key people of influence who develop products or align themselves to the right products or package up the right products, you know, the way you make money is through products, so, or product ecosystems. So I noticed that was point number three. Number four is they had a profile. So if you Googled them, they owned that first page of Google. And if you Googled several terms that they wanted to own, they also owned, you know, those terms as well. I realized that was almost like a form of real estate. It was almost like some intellectual land that people owned where, you know, anything that came onto that land, into that niche, they were the owners of that micro niche. And then the final one was they were very, very good at collaborations and partnerships. So everywhere they went, they would put together a deal, put together a partnership, get a distribution deal going, get a product deal going, get a brand deal going. You know, they were constantly deal making. So I said, well, it's easy to focus on those five things. Anyone can be taught to pitch, publish, productize, profile, and partnership. We can teach that. So when we put together the Entrepreneur Growth Accelerator, we made that the cornerstone methodology and the cornerstone framework for developing intellectual property and scaling it.
Busy schedule? We've got you covered. You can snack smartly and slim down with our 7 proven snack options on the go. Visit legendarylifepodcast.com and get yours now. Available until December 28th.
Yeah, man, it's so brilliant and simple and straightforward. I love it. And someone, now I really feel like I have a good understanding of what it means to be a KPI, but for someone listening right now who's like, all right, that sounds cool. Key person of influence, that makes sense. I need to become more famous, for lack of a better word, to really build my brand, to be the person that people go to. Now, if I were listening to this, I would ask myself, okay, because it's a continuum, right? You may be famous to 500 people or 5 million people, but where do I fit in that continuum? How do I know how much of a key person of influence I am? How would you answer that question for someone?
There's two types of businesses that you want to build. Number one is either a lifestyle business, which after interviewing thousands of entrepreneurs, I can tell you exactly the parameters, which is that it's an organization that has between 3 and 12 people. It focuses on a highly valued micro niche, top end of the market. It has 4 products and it has a key person of influence who's well known, liked, and trusted within that micro niche. And that's a lifestyle business. If you want to build a performance business, you need to look at 50 to 150 people and you have several micro niches, so different markets, different products, different territories. You cultivate a culture of influence. So you have key people of influence at several levels in the organization, and you develop high performance culture by having key people of influence set the standard. So essentially, if you wanted to have a lifestyle business, you might only need to be famous for 5,000 people. And when we talk about that, it's just influence, or it's industry fame. But it's not, you know, it's not real fame. It's just having a dedicated following of 5,000 people who have heard of you, who Google you and find out about you, who read your stuff. And that's really easy to achieve in the modern world with digital technology that's free. And then if you want to go into the levels of performance, then you're talking a lot more than that. You're talking tens of thousands of people, maybe 100,000 people who you need to be able to appeal to across several markets.
Yeah, let's stick with lifestyle because we have a limited amount of time, and most people who are listening to this are either in a lifestyle business right now or want to achieve one. You know, the performance, that's something completely different animal. By the way, I train both people who have performance and lifestyle businesses, and it's definitely a difference. The people who have the performance businesses tend to be a lot more stressed. I'll tell you that. So,
yeah.
So let's get into, you mentioned the word micro niche. Now, I've had people on here before and talked about this. Brian Horn, Authority Alchemy, talked about the riches are in the niches. Can you explain what a niche is and what a micro niche is?
A niche might be, well, an industry might be the fitness training industry. A niche might be Miami fitness training industry. And a micro niche might be Miami real estate agents fitness training. If there are special needs that a real estate agent might have, then can cater to those special needs. So here in London, for example, we have London fitness trainers who are a niche. We have London fitness trainers who only work with men who want to get from over 20% body fat to under 20% body fat. And that's a micro niche. So you're being very specific that this is a product only for men who are over 20% body fat and want to get under 20% body fat. Now, that is actually someone I know, and that's an example of a micro niche. Another example would be Bridget Hunt, who runs a community called Six Packs Chicks. So Six Pack Chicks is a community of women who are striving to achieve their very first six pack. And she guides this community of women around a strategy to develop a six pack for the first time. And she's got a book called Six Pack Chicks. Now, it's a micro niche. She's not just fitness training. She's training women who want to have their first six pack ever. So that's a particular micro niche.
Yeah. And the issue there is, and this has happened to me many times in the fitness industry, is if you're a if you're in an industry where there's a lot of options, like let's take fitness training here in Miami, I'll sit down with potential clients. I charge a lot more than the average personal trainer. I make people sign up for 3, 6, or 12 months. And they're like, why would I do this if I can go to Billy Bob down the street or Jose or whoever, and they charge less money than you, and they don't make me sign this thing? Because to them, I'm a personal trainer, that Billy Bob's a personal trainer. There's no differentiation in their mind. And without that differentiation to explain the reason why they would pay more, they're not going to want to do it. So do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. So the trick here is it's not about just trying to be clever or cute. It's about genuinely offering a superior and more tailored and customized product that your marketplace wants. So, for example, the gentleman I mentioned who created an executive fitness concierge service, he went from a solo operator to a team of three people. He has a full-time executive assistant whose job is to find out what hotels his clients are staying in, whether they have a gym or not, to organize a local fitness trainer to turn up and do the fitness training session in Hong Kong, for example. If one of his clients is going to a restaurant for a meeting, the executive assistant will go in advance, find out what the menu is at that particular restaurant, and actually text through, this is what you're ordering for this particular lunch. You're going to have the chicken salad as a main course. You're going to have a gin and soda as your drink. And literally they pick out exactly what they're going to eat at each meal at every single restaurant that they go to. based upon the menu options that are available to them. So it's one less thing that that executive has to think about. The other thing too is they've cultivated a philosophy of fitness that relates specifically to these high-performing men who are traveling all over the world. And, you know, it's fitness routines that can be done in hotel rooms in under 20 minutes. It's fitness routines that happen on Skype. It's WhatsApp connections. It's photographing food. It's connecting on MyFitnessPal apps. So it's a tailored solution that involves, you know, a team of three people managing a high-value problem for someone who's a high-value person. In the example of six-pack chicks, she's creating specialized recipes, and she has a nutritionalist on her team. She has a cardio trainer who is her head cardio trainer, a head weights trainer who is a specialist in weights, and they're all specialist women who have six packs. And they're all people who have previously had no six pack. They've been overweight, and then they've lost weight to get the six pack. So they're all people whose personal stories line up to the brand. So now one of the things here is it's also not about achieving every single person in the marketplace. So in the book Oversubscribed, we talk about finding out what is your capacity to deliver excellence and then just purely and simply oversubscribing that capacity. So I'll tell you something quite shocking. The executive fitness business, where they're working with high-paid executive men, they only have 12 clients. Now, they only need 12 clients because each guy pays something like £25,000 a year. So when you only need 12 clients and your whole business revolves around 12 clients, if someone says to you, well, why don't I just go down the road? You say, great, go down the road. I have no problem with you. I have no problem with you going down the road. If you don't see the value in what we do, that's fine. And in their case, they do, because when you only need, in that example, when you only need 12 clients and you have 25 inquiries coming in every month, you really don't care. You've got a waiting list.
Yeah. And I used to turn people down without having that, without having my pitch dialed in as well as you have, and without the structure to back up what you've had this guy do. But I'll tell you, if you're listening to this right now and you're technically very proficient, maybe you're a fitness trainer, because I have a lot of fitness trainers that listen to this show, your technical expertise, how good you are at showing exercises, writing programs, writing all that stuff, does not matter as much as the way Daniel is telling you to deliver that service, to have it highly targeted and, you know, I'm sure highly effective as well. So make sure you really have focus on that method of delivery and differentiating yourself and becoming a key person of influence, because you do not want to struggle like I have and so many other people, and more than just the fitness industry. Daniel, let's talk a little bit about the publishing aspect, because you have a very particular view on publishing. I publish. This is my podcast. I interview people on it as well as do solo episodes, and I put up videos and occasionally write articles. But talk a little bit about publishing and what you believe is the best way to reach the key person of influence status through publishing.
So the best way is to write a really great book. And there's a few reasons why I would say that. Number one, if nobody even read your book, it would be worth doing, because it forces you to clarify your thinking, formalize your stories and examples, perhaps cultivate a methodology. All of these things that you do when you have to write a book are very, very powerful, because it generates what's called intellectual property. And intellectual property is the DNA of a great business. So presuming that you go through all of that, you then end up with 40,000 words worth of content or 30,000 words worth of content. And what happens is you can republish that as articles, as blogs, as reports. It goes onto Amazon. Google indexes every single word in the book. Amazon indexes all the keywords in the book. When somebody Googles you, they discover that you're an author. When you send out 100 free copies of your book and you follow up with a phone call, people are absolutely shocked that you would take the time to speak to them, because you're an author. And it's a great tool for becoming oversubscribed. If you know that you can only take on 20 clients and you send out 2,500 books, you have no problems with clients. You suddenly get to choose whoever you want to work with. So a book is a great tool, and it's a great exercise. Even if you don't get to a book, let's say you only end up writing 10,000 words, well, great, you've got 15 articles that you can put on blogs. You've got stuff that you can submit to local magazines. You've got reports that you can generate and have a graphic designer make as, you know, fancy downloads. All of that stuff helps for becoming oversubscribed.
Yeah, and you changed my mind on that and helped provide some clarity, because I felt like, okay, well, I'm going to do the podcast. I'm best at speaking. I'm best at interviewing people. I'm much better at that and much more time efficient than writing articles. And definitely, I've never written a book, and even the thought of it sounds daunting. Really quick, some people say, we can talk about what you do in Key Person of Influence, but some people say, hey, listen, don't write a book just to write a book. You know, you have to make sure it's really a solid book that delivers a lot of value. Don't just put something out there to just say that you have a book. Now, do you agree with that, or how do you feel about that statement?
I agree to an extent, but not to the extent of becoming a perfectionist. So I have a saying that prolific beats perfect, and the greatest, you know, influencers on the planet are mostly prolific people. The Beatles were prolific. They wrote 237 songs in 6 years. You know, Oprah Winfrey's prolific. She's done 3,000 episodes of her show in 10 years. The most influential people are prolific people. They're not necessarily perfectionists, because perfectionism can lead to inaction. I'll give you a great example of a really, really great book that was done by a fitness trainer. I'll give you a couple of examples, but one example is a guy called JP de Villiers. JP was working back-to-back slots, 12 hours a day type thing, and he really only had about 10 or 15 minutes between clients that he could do anything. So he hired an executive assistant, and between slots for 10 minutes, he would phone the executive assistant, who was a virtual assistant, I think, overseas, and was only maybe $10 an hour. And he would say, okay, in the last session, I talked about the importance of drinking more water. So the executive assistant would ask lots of questions, and they would say, why is it important to drink more water? What happens to the body if you don't drink more water? What happens to the body if you do drink more water? And then the executive assistant would basically transcribe the call, edit it into a little article, and email it back to him. Now, he did this 77 times. He did this across the course of a month, and it was really simple. He would be talking to his client about something, and then he would think, ah, that's what I'm going to do my next tip on. So he'd say, it's always important to exercise to music. Music helps you to go that little bit extra, work that little bit harder. Make sure you've got music on in the background that is upbeat music. And then he'd get on the phone and talk about that. So what happened is, at the end of the month, he had 77 tips, and he created a book called Reshape, which is 77 Ways to Reshape Your Life. And that's been a very successful book for him. It's a very fun book. You can pick it up, flick through the little chapters. It's a thin book, and you find all sorts of great tips and tricks. As a result of that, he did a book launch. He invited celebrities to come to the book launch, and he did some fitness training with the celebrities. He got on radio. He, you know, gave talks at major brands, and has built a very, very successful business. He runs retreats in Thailand now, where 20 people at a time go out to Thailand and do martial arts fitness for a week or 10 days at a time. And so, you know, a very successful opportunity. Now, another book is a guy called Tim, one of our clients. He wrote a book called The 30-30 Plan, which is 30 minutes of intense exercise for 30 days in a row. That's a different book. It really does set out a specific plan, and why it works and how it works and how to get motivated about it and all the problems that you're going to face trying to do it. But it's a very different book. It's a narrative. It has stories, and it follows a particular thing, and you read it front to back. You don't just dip into it. And that's built him a very, very successful business, because he's been able to build a community of people who are doing the 30-30 plan.
Yeah, great examples. And Daniel, I appreciate all the fitness examples, because I'm learning as you're talking. So, and I know everyone else out there who, everyone listening who is also in that profession appreciates it.
Yeah,
well,
I thought I'd use those examples, and I'm steering away from our examples who do liposuction and who,
yeah,
and also our chocolate chef, and, you know, and all of those sorts of things. I'm trying to find the ones that are right for your listeners.
Yeah, definitely appreciate that. And one thing that occurred to me when I was going through your book and just going through this whole process, and I interviewed another person who has Person of Interest, the book Person of Interest, which is similar to yours, although I find yours a bit more streamlined and, you know, less inspirational and more tactical, I guess I would say, although it's very inspirational hearing the success stories, but more tactical, which I appreciate because I feel like I'm inspired enough, my man. Just tell me what to do. But listening to what you're saying, and I'm all in, right? Get on talk shows, do podcasts, get up and speak. But for the person who hears that and says, wow, I really want to do this business, but to get up and talk in front of people, that, you know, I'd rather, more people are scared of public speaking than death. Of course, that's what they say on paper. But, you know, there's this dread about that. And what would you say to the person who doesn't, or is not willing to become or put themselves out there? Is there still a way for them to be successful? Or is this just, you know, the way that you promote? What do you have to say about that?
Yeah. So the first thing is that it's not necessarily about public speaking or media appearances. You know, the beauty of the published word is that you can take as long as you like to write an article. You can write an article for a small and particular group of people. You can also interview others and share their insights, and that helps to build you as a key person of influence as well. I'm not necessarily saying you have to be a public speaker or, you know, to be a media personality. In fact, some people probably damage their brand if they prematurely, you know, went on TV or went on radio or went on a stage. So the idea is primarily to value your intellectual property. Now, the other thing here is that it's not about you. I really want to stress that being a key person of influence is not about self-aggrandizing. It's not about ego. It's not about building a personal brand. You know, all of those things, you know, personal brand is a byproduct, but it's actually about celebrating the customer's wants and needs. It's about truly connecting with a niche that you care about. And it's not even about being in the spotlight. If anything, it's about being the spotlight. So one of our sayings that we have with our clients is get famous on the results of your clients.
Yeah,
so don't go off, you know, don't go off and try and be in the spotlight. Don't try and be all things to everyone. Don't try and be this personality who's got all the answers. But, you know, focus your attention on being the spotlight for an issue or being the spotlight for a particular type of person solving a particular type of problem. So a great example would be Oprah Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey is one of the most famous people on earth. And she's actually not someone who craves the spotlight. What she does is casts the spotlight on others. When you watch the show, you see that she interviews other people, and she interviews people in their day-to-day lives. And sometimes she interviews celebrities. Sometimes she champions a particular cause or charity. Sometimes she champions a particular book. But she's great at shining the spotlight on others. I personally have never gravitated towards her magazine because every single edition of Oprah magazine is her, and it has her on the front cover, and it's almost like she's trying to be in the spotlight. And to me, that doesn't have the same excitement or ring to it when she just does what she does best, which is put others in the spotlight. So that's a great example. I have seen people who try to self-aggrandize. You can tell that it's all about ego. And in a place like Miami, you know, you don't want to try and be the biggest ego because you'll never win that game.
Not here, man. No way.
Not in Miami. So what you want to do in a place like Miami is you want to play a humble game where you showcase your clients and you showcase a particular problem that needs solving. And, you know, you always want to be able to tell yourself it's not about me. People are not interested in me personally. They're interested in solving a problem in their own life. So sometimes that takes the heat out of being, you know, a speaker. You know, whenever I go, sometimes I get asked to speak in front of really large groups, and it's like thousands of people at a time, and the sea of faces goes on forever. And there was a time where I got really kind of a bit nervous and had a sort of, you know, biological reaction to standing in front of that many people. And then I realized every single person in the audience, no matter how many of them there are, they're just a person in their life trying to solve a particular problem, trying to deal with the challenges of their life, trying to balance various values that they have and various commitments that they have, and that my job is not to try and make this about me. It's to make it about their life and what they're going through. And provided I keep telling myself that or keep connecting with that, I realize that actually I'm not nervous at all. I can help people. I've got some stories to share, and I think each individual person can take something from what I've got to say. And as soon as I realized it's not about me, I felt a lot more relaxed about it.
Yeah, I love that, Daniel. And I went through the same process as well as many other people whose stories I've heard. As soon as you start to focus on serving and you're getting up there, not because you want the spotlight on you, but you want to give something, you want to share something with the audience, something that's going to help them make a mindset shift or change their behavior in a way that's positive, everything starts to come together and it's much better. And yeah, thank you for sharing that, man. So important. So if you're out there and you don't want to be a star, it's not really about that, even though I guess both of us have used the word famous and, you know, in the spotlight, but it's really about serving and helping people. And Daniel, you mentioned something before. You said you believe that entrepreneurs are going to be the people that save the world, right? And I believe that as well. So if you're listening and you feel the calling to do something more to help people to get out there and do something awesome, make sure you do it and make sure you check out keypersonofinfluence.com and see what Daniel is up to and, you know, follow that path because it's something that everyone can do. Daniel, I know, speaking of public speaking, I know you have a gig to go to. You'll be speaking at an event, but I wanted to get a little bit into just your fitness. And I know you're a big snowboarder. You probably enjoy other extreme sports, but first of all, how does fitness factor into your life? You sound like you're super busy. You've got so many things going on. Where does fitness fall into your life? And we'll start there.
Yeah, so I was afraid you'd ask.
Okay.
So for starters, fitness has always been something I've battled with. Fitness is not naturally high on my values. I'm not someone who naturally loves to try and keep fit and naturally gets in the gym. And I've only really ever succeeded at fitness when I've had fitness trainers who I work with. And when I would do, so the times I've really succeeded at fitness is when I got into dancing, when I was a single guy and I loved turning up to dance with, to do Latin jive dancing with lots of lovely ladies. And when I also got into boxing fitness and I worked with a boxing trainer to do boxing. So my only fitness breakthroughs have happened when I've done it with professionals. I naturally love snowboarding because I love the environment of snowboarding. I love being on the Alps in Europe and the European Alpine lifestyle. The interesting thing that has happened for me is in the last 12 months, I've become a dad. And it really realigns all your values and it kind of shakes up the way you feel about business, the way you feel about, you know, your personal needs. It shakes up the way you can travel and the way you can schedule your life. So to be perfectly honest with you, in the last 12 months, I've been really struggling to find the balance between being a dad and being home early for bedtime and also getting up early, you know, because babies wake up really, really early as it turns out. And then also running a global business where I'm, you know, where I'm on seven time zones and I have, you know, people who depend upon me on that. The balance that I made a conscious decision that fitness would slip down the ranking for my values for that first 15 months. And I thought, you know what, just those first 15 months where we're finding our feet as a family, I'm going to take one pressure off my shoulders. And for me, fitness just means getting out for a daily walk, walking around London, taking the stairs, maintaining, you know, a bit of consciousness around food, getting to the sauna or the steam room as opposed to the weights room for a quick little sauna or something like that. This year, I've taken the pressure off my shoulders to try and have any sort of fitness breakthroughs. And I'm about to reevaluate that and begin working with fitness professionals to bring that in. So I'm not probably your best example of someone who's keeping that ball in the air as well as I should.
Yeah, but you know what? I like that, Daniel. It's real. And thanks for sharing that story. It's not, I mean, even though you're a great public speaker and you speak all over the place, it's not easy to share like, well, yeah, thanks for asking that question. I appreciate your vulnerability. And there's people who listen to this show who appreciate that story as well. And man, I went through a period of time where I was in the gym all the time. It was easy to stay in great shape. And then when I started building my business, and started realizing like I got to get out of the gym and start working on in the business so much and working out, my health started taking a backseat as well, my exercise program. So really appreciate that story, Daniel. But I will ask you this, what do you do or do you have any rituals or anything at all that keeps you at the top of your game for your business and for your family?
One of my rituals is unscheduled downtime. Here's a crazy one for all of our listeners in the States, and it's taking holidays. So in the States,
what's a holiday?
Yeah, exactly. One of the things that I noticed when I was working with a lot of our clients in the US is there's a culture of being busy all the time. There's a culture of trying to outwork every single person who's out there. And there's a culture of not taking holidays of, you know, more than, say, a week or two a year. When you come to Europe, the sort of minimum holidays a year is 6 weeks per year. There's also a culture of taking long weekends and going skiing. And there's a culture of, you know, sort of having days where you finish early or start late. And one of the things that I found when I allowed myself the time of unscheduled, unplanned activities just to kind of drift is that I would have really great ideas. I would feel inspired and energized to write. I'd feel inspired and energized to think big picture. I'd pick up the phone and make some of those calls that are not urgent but are probably important. And life was really good. So I mentioned in the book that it's important to take holidays and it's important to maintain a sense of vitality, not just functionality. A lot of people in the States, especially, and I hate to generalize, but I noticed it so much when I was in the States. A lot of people are focused so much on functionally turning up and functionally being in the office, and they're missing out on the vitality.
Yeah, and productivity and joy in life. And yeah, we're overweight, stressed, and overworked here in the States. And, you know, it's something that I'm trying to make a dent in myself. But yeah, that's great, man. I'm guilty of that too. I'm going to Arizona next week.
You might need to sneak over and see how the Europeans do it.
You know what? I definitely need to do that for sure. I need to go to Europe. I need a different perspective because Arizona isn't going to do it for me. And Arizona, by the way, is going to be a networking event, a seminar. So it's not even a true vacation. But Daniel, thank you so much for your time today, sharing your wisdom, your knowledge, and helping people get clear that there's a step-by-step process to becoming a key person of influence in whatever field you're in currently or whatever field you'd like to be in. And you can find out more about that at keypersonofinfluence.com. You should definitely go get Key Person of Influence, the book on Amazon. It's the book that I've given more people recently than any other book. And Daniel, you also have a great team here in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, and the US edition of the book, Key Person of Influence, is co-authored with Kevin Harrington from Shark Tank.
Yes, yes. And I definitely appreciated that part in hearing the stories out of Kevin's life. But yeah. I just really appreciate having you today. Is there any other place that I didn't mention that you'd like the listeners to go to and check out what you're up to?
No, I'd be incredibly honored and flattered if people got a copy of the Key Person of Influence book. One of the things that people find very valuable is doing the Key Person of Influence scorecard, which is keypersonofinfluence.com/scorecard. It's a series of 40 questions that are very difficult to dodge. They're fairly binary questions, but it gives you an overall score as to how you could develop yourself as a key person of influence. It puts some numbers around it. It creates a customized 30-page report. It's probably one of the fastest ways to kind of suck the juice out of the framework and the methodology.
Awesome. So keypersonofinfluence.com/scorecard. That will be in the show notes along with all the other resources that were mentioned in this interview. Daniel Priestley, thank you so much for your time again. How about some last words to finish off the interview?
The last words would just be to retune you back into that concept of you're already standing on a mountain of value. Your story is valuable. Your experiences are valuable. Even your struggles are valuable in the right context. And it's very easy in a bright, shiny world of internet that beams opportunities to you 24 hours a day to get distracted with everyone else's story, to get distracted with my story, to get distracted with your story, and to get distracted with, you know, celebrities and all that sort of stuff. The biggest value that you'll ever get is tuning into your own story and tuning into your own insights, your own experiences, and to own your own identity as a key person of influence.
Awesome. Powerful words. Daniel Priestley, thank you so much for being a guest today on the Legendary Light Podcast.
My absolute pleasure.